to Legacy Game Changers. I'm your host, Vanetta Rogers, accountant, tax preparer, certified money coach, insurance agent, and travel agent. In today's episode, I want to welcome back David from Something on My Mind podcast. We'll be discussing marriage and finance. Make sure you listen to the part one of my interview with David and his wife, Cindy. Cindy is not available today, but let me give you a little information about David. David is a published author and accomplished project manager in the IT field. His book, I'm Not Flipping Burgers When I'm 70, explains personal finances, budgeting, home ownership, and investing for the future. Welcome, David.
Thank you for having me today.
Thank you. So my first question is, when should a couple sit down and discuss their views of finance? Once they get engaged, should that be before then?
we've talked about this just recently on one of our shows. You know, definitely before you get engaged. We know stories of people who actually hid things and then they were married and then they find out and that causes a big problem. I don't think in your first date necessarily you should be assessing too many things. Like if you're a couple, for example, that's younger, you might say, I have student loan debt or something. That might be a common thing, right? You could talk about certain things because it's relatable to people. But when you're getting down to, you know, what you make for a living and, you know, do you own this or that or that kind of thing? I mean, first of all, in your first meeting, that's no fun to talk about that anyway. But once you, you know, once you get something on the stove and it's cooking a little bit and you feel like there's a future, then, you know, these conversations can start happening a little bit. So that exactly what time, I don't know. I mean, if you're really moving along fast and, you know, you want to talk about that in 2 months or 6 months or whatever things are going on, then you just got to get a good feeling with each other when you do that. But yeah, as you're getting to date and get to know somebody and you feel like, again, the relationship's going somewhere, you're going to have to start having these conversations. They have to know what kind of person you are. For example, if I have 50 grand in credit card debt and the other person's really responsible with their money, that could be a big turnoff, right? They want to know, how did you get there? And, you know, are you responsible with money, for example? So there's a variety of things that, you know, no matter what, if you're asked the question, when you're comfortable answering it, don't wait too long and always be honest. But yeah, waiting way into the engagement game, you know, even before you put the rock on the finger is way too late. You've got to know what you're getting into before you start, because the whole point of being married or a long-term relationship is you don't do that if you have doubts, and that will cause a lot of problems.
Now, I know as a tax preparer, I run across a lot of couples who didn't find out that their spouse owed the IRS money until they filed their taxes and the money didn't come in. And I mean, it's just, you know, I've got a lot of, and they don't know as a joint, when you file a joint, that you're jointly responsible for that tax debt, unless you put in that in the spouse form. But I've known people who've owned, you know, that spouse owed $10,000 or $11,000, and they never told the spouse that they owed that much to the IRS.
Well, for the most part, the number one reason relationships and marriages break up is due to money. So that would be one factor that could happen. Again, so if they're not honest, I guarantee you the $11,000 that the one person didn't tell the other about is going to be discussed in the car. And that alone could open up a can of worms that creates mistrust. So like, well, what else did you tell me about? And so, yeah, it's, you know, that's the hardest thing for people doing relationships is be honest. Like they always want to hold something back, but if you have to be an open book, and then, you know, everybody has secrets in their lives, but they're not going to affect your relationship. You don't have to tell every story in your life, but the stuff that matters, that stuff you have to engage in your life, that means a whole lot. And that's what finance isn't always about money. It's also about honesty. And finance has a lot of, you know, money has a lot of emotion around it, because you make decisions a lot of times based on emotion, good or bad decisions. So again, you have to be honest and upfront, and you should be able to tell when you should have these conversations. It should come natural in your relationship.
So in your relationship, who, because you know they say people are spenders and people are savers, who was the spender and who was the saver?
I am the saver. She's the spender. You know, I will say this, we live a very nice life. We've afforded a nice life. We've built a nice life for the 10 years we've been married. So, it's not that I'm frugal by any stretch, but we do follow a budget. And so the point is to make sure that you pay yourself first. So long as we're hitting our financial goals, for our investments, number one, and then we always, you know, we always have the emergency and the rainy day fund, so we're covered in savings for just whatever we want to blow our money on. It's cool. So when all the other bills are paid, then I don't care if there's no money and, you know, left at the end of every month. I don't really care. So, but, you know, if Cindy's out there blowing a bunch of money on something, sometimes she can be a little impulsive at the store, just picking and buying things, or she wants to replace something like a year later after we bought it. Sometimes she gets like that. And I'm like, well, there's something over here that's a piece of crap. Why don't we focus on that? But there is a check and balance. So, you know, again, the budget takes care of itself. I probably review it every 6 weeks to make sure, because, you know, it runs itself because we put it in place. So if I feel like something's getting a little off, then I'll say, hey, you know, we're going a little bit over here. So, you know, I'll just put a little note out to her when we talk about it and make sure that we don't get off the rails. But we're really good about what we do, so we don't really run into that problem. But in a household, there is going to be somebody who manages the bills. We feel that you should do it under one unit. Shouldn't have two separate budgets. So you have to have that one person, you know, control that money. But in the same token, they should have access to know what's going on and how to get to any of the accounts or all that stuff. So it should, again, be an open book. But yeah, it should be one person driving that, you know, reminder or being the gatekeeper with all the money.
Now, do you recommend a couple to have, like I said, one major account for the bills, and then if the person wants to have their separate savings account for whatever spending they want to do that's not budget related, do you recommend that?
Sure. I mean, people should have their own money. They work, they're independent. You just have to figure out what that is. So if you need to slice out a chunk of money each month for spending that is for her and maybe a chunk for me, that's fine. And then there might be just a together chunk. You know, that's probably the best way to do it, because at least the way we design budgets is that you have all the bills, like I said, all the stuff you pay yourself with, but there's a savings category. I call it like a leftovers category. Pretty much this is what's left over after your bills, and there's that number sitting there every month when you start out. So if you want to divvy that money up, that's cool, because I get it. But in the same token, if someone goes out and makes 80 grand a year and someone else makes 40, you can't look at it like someone makes 40, they get less to spend. It should be that 120 grand as a unit, and you should equally be able to spend that money. It's because it's a team. So you get into like who makes what and I make that and I should have more, you're going to, again, run into the problem. So we definitely feel that you should control it together, but at the same time, just come up to an agreeable amount that you can go spend your money any way you want, and that's great. And so that's how we would recommend it.
And do you think people should discuss all big ticket items? Like if I'm getting ready to buy a car, then we should have discussed it and plan on where the money is coming from and, you know, who, you know, what type of car I'm going to get. Should that be one of the major sit down discussions that a couple should have?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, again, it gets back to what I keep saying, but this is good for your listeners if they're really into this, that yes, there's big ticket items in life, like boats and cars and houses and travel. Those are usually your big ones. And you have to be careful with that. If, like Cindy's car, for example, is more modest than my car. I drive a pretty nice car, and we chose to drive my car, which is much more expensive, but we use it for clientele purposes. So we're dealing with people who have a lot of high net worth. So we're kind of playing in the sandbox. So we got to have a car if we take them around on a client event or meet them for something social, like at a sporting event, that we take them in that car. Now, do we have to? No, but that's why we chose to do it. So again, my car is much more expensive than hers. Now, could we afford another expensive car and not have hers? Yes, we could, but we chose not to, and she doesn't care. So she drives a nice car, but she's cool with what she has. And so that's for an example of the way we made our decision. But again, if you got to be able to afford it. So if you both have your own car, it's not necessarily fair for someone to have a much more expensive car than the other person. You got to decide what range that you're paying. If you need it to be equal to be fair, then I believe that's the way you should do it. But like in our case, we made a decision together and why we made our decision. But it definitely has to be talked about.
Yeah. Like in my case, I didn't want to have two car payments, so nobody could get until one was paid off, somebody can't buy another one. So
yeah,
that was my, like, okay, because we're only going to have one car payment at a time.
That's fair. That's good. You made a decision.
We have to take a short commercial break. We'll be right back with more of Dave.
Business owners, have you ever thought of owning your own business but didn't know how to get started? Or are you a new business owner experiencing early startup growing pains? Do you want to transform your business to go to the next level? ICE Consulting and Coaching can help you through these growing pains. We encourage you to take advantage of over 45 years of knowledge, training, and experience. We will take you through a proven results-oriented three-phase approach. Phase one is where you will identify your strengths, business development gaps, and opportunities. Phase two is where you will commit to a strategy, a plan of action tailored to you and your business. Phase three is where you will excel in transformational success. Visit our website at iceconsultingservices.com and sign up for a free consultation and a pre-assessment today.
Hello, this is Vanetta Rogers. Join me on Wednesday at 5 p.m. for my new podcast, Legacy Game Changers. Every Wednesday at 5 p.m., join me and we'll talk about finance, education, and wealth building for you and your family to leave a legacy for your loved ones. Once again, that's Legacy Game Changers, Wednesday at 5 p.m. Welcome back to Legacy Game Changer. I'm here with David. My next question is, how do a couple determine when they're going to have children, who's going to stay home, how long the person's going to stay home, and how it's going to affect their finances?
Yeah, it's interesting because years ago, it's always the woman, right? So that's not necessarily the case anymore, and that's good because we want equality anywhere we can get it in life. And we know it's tough in this country. So there's nothing wrong with a guy staying home. They have to decide that. Now, this is where maybe income can come into play. If someone's making a lot more money than the other person, and if that person stays home, then it's going to sacrifice your budget and your money. So that usually will take over in the answer of who gets to stay home because of that. Hopefully, you know, with more and more corporate jobs, at least they're given the ability, at least in the interim, for maternity leave or paternity leave for the guy, that maybe both of them can get that opportunity, at least in that 6 week or 12 week or whatever the company offers for them to do that. So that's probably getting to be a better thing. And so hopefully they both have time together. But if someone's deciding to stay home overall, that's a good question. If they can afford it, that's in their budget. So they got it handled. There are a lot of couples out there that are in the middle class or lower range who have kids where the second person, it costs so much to send the children, especially if they have more than one, into daycare, that it's not worth it for them to even work. And so they don't work at all because they're actually saving money by not working. So that's where they got to decide how to do that. But at least in terms of who stays home, personally, I don't care who it is. You guys got to figure it out together. It doesn't matter if it's a guy or a girl. To me, In my case, when I got divorced, my son was about 7, and I pretty much had full custody. So I knew what it was like to be a guy. Now, I didn't stay home, but I understand what it took to, you know, I appreciated women more for having traditionally stayed home and take care of the kids or having the kids more. So that made a lot more sense to me by the time I married Cindy. So that's one of the reasons we probably got along so well.
Now, what type of adjustments did you have to make financially for a blended family?
Not much, but what we did do is we looked at where our situation was in our careers, for example. She had 2 kids. I had 1, and we both all lived together again because we both had custody. I will say that, you know, you look at the future of what you want to do based on what you have, because if we're together, we can afford it. And I always say this, if you have ability to live on your own and go out, then you have ability to make choices with your money. Unless something really bad happens, it's unforeseen, that you can't control, it does happen to some people, but that's not most of them. So you can make adjustments in your money. And if you get together in the first place to be married and raise like 3 kids like we did, then you know, you got to plan that. I will say though, for example, like I looked at Cindy and I said, she, in her field, she was really well respected, but wasn't living up to her potential in her job. And I'm like, if you're going to work an 8-hour day or a 10-hour day, then you might as well get the most out of it and get paid and for what you deserve, for what your skills are. So I encouraged her to go into like a management program at one of the major broker firms. And she did. And then she got as far as she could. And then she was managing about 80 people at one point. And then she just kind of hit a level where they were going to put her where she wanted to go. And then she branched off and she went to another place. And now she's the COO of a really, like, it's the number one firm in Michigan now for an independent broker. So like she went from all the way from like more of a customer service type of person in the beginning. And now 30 years later, she's, you know, she broke the glass ceiling. But that's the one thing we worked on in our marriage. Other than the kids, probably that was the number one thing we worked on, is like, if you're going to work, your career potential needs to be better. And she agreed and she's done it. And it's provided us a much more fruitful life because she gets to be a leader and she makes more money. And so that's an example of how we looked at it when we got together, of like, what are you going to do for the future? And I always say this, if you don't like what you're doing and you want to make money, then either quit where you're at, or you can't go up the chain, or go find something else to do, or take some more schooling, and you're going to have to hoof it for maybe 60 hours to get a degree or get some skills and move on to something else. So you have a choice. Sometimes it's harder to get there, but you got to look at your, what do you want in the future? And if you want to meet those goals, then you got to line them up so that you can achieve them.
Now, does your company help couples sit down and to establish a budget? Because I know a lot of people don't really know where to start to have a budget, to do a budget.
Yeah, well, we can take Cindy again, for example. She was you know, abused and foreclosed on. She had a really bad husband and was basically bankrupt. She actually was homeless. And she was staying at her neighbor's house for a time. That's pretty much where she was when I met her. I'm just getting out of that. And this is what I do with everybody when I sit down with them. I said, go give me your last 6 months of bank statements and we're going to go run through those. That's exactly where you start. And you look at all that, and the number one thing that typically gets spent more than you, first of all, when you don't budget, you don't know, you, whatever you think you're spending more, and eventually you'll be in the hole. And so the number one thing though is food, groceries, coffee, Panera, whatever you, all that kind of stuff, 7-Eleven, getting Slurpees, whatever it is, all that stuff just adds up. And Cindy realized in her, for example, in her case, she was like buying her kids, love to keep them happy in a bad situation. But when she was looking at everything, at the money, she's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe how much that I've been spending on all this kind of stuff. And that's usually a pretty big eye opener. And then you simply have to take all the money that you know you're spending on other things. Like, and the easy ones are like your rent payment or your mortgage or car note, whatever it is, you know what all that is. But you really got to dive deeper into all the other things that are out there that keep coming up that you don't think matter, but they add up. So if you pay something on a monthly basis, you got to go find it. It could be Netflix. It doesn't matter how it is. If it's that small, you have to track it and start making that list out. And then it starts giving you this picture. And then you got to decide on the other pieces that are more arbitrary. So if you buy clothes every month, you have to come up with a number that you can afford. But your goal is to get everything, all your necessities on paper against your income, and then decide, do I have any money left over? And if I don't at the every month, I got to pull something back. In the meantime, you also have to, again, you have to have a rainy day and emergency fund. And so if you don't have those, you got to start having a plan to build those up in that budget along with savings. Like, you have to account for all of these things. And I could talk to you for an hour on this because this is my wheelhouse. But if you don't put that together, you're eventually going to dive into money that you don't have, or then you start putting things on credit cards because you don't have the money to pay for things. So you have to start tightening up the screws and go, listen, I got to cut back somewhere. You know what I mean? And so again, you can do it. But you really have to, especially if you're budgeting and pulling things in together because you haven't done it before, there's a no doubt that you're going to have to make sacrifices that you're not used to doing for a while until you can get things, you know, settled up and start saving some money and getting down a lot of credit card debt, which people have typically, things like that. You got to get it into control. Otherwise you're just pretty much kicking the can down the road.
And did you use those programs like Mint or you need a budget? Have you used any of those programs before?
No, I know what they are. I know how they work. I actually use my own. Like on my website, I'm a little old school. I use my own spreadsheet and with Google Sheets or Excel, and it's very defined. It has formulas in there. It works. That's what I do. I have some other tools in there that'll like predict your 12-month spending on certain items so that you can make sure that you have the money available when you get periodic expenses coming in that are maybe annually or quarterly or biannually, things like that. Or if you bowl in a league and it's only five months, you make sure that you bill yourself every month so you can afford all these things when they come up throughout the year. But as far as a tool, no, I'm an old school Excel person because to me, it usually has its, I like it because it has flexibility. That's mm-hmm. the most flexible. There's no tool out there that's a silver bullet to me. And so I don't go into that. I want to be able to move my money freely because I have a lot of accounts and things to move around. So I don't do that, but I'm not against those apps. If they work for people like Mint or the other one you mentioned, then absolutely. If that works for you, you should use them. Whatever tools you need to get you disciplined, you should do them.
So do you have any more advice for our audience about budgeting and finance?
I would say that you have to be honest with yourself. Again, cut back on something if you're not managing your budget right. I mean, you know your spending, you know your habits. So if you honestly create a budget and put everything down in there that comes. And that, for example, like if I know Amazon Prime is due at $132 every February, then I got to put $11 away every month. Like whatever it is, you have to account for all that. But you have to be honest with what you have. And if you have to say, listen, my girls are going on their weekend somewhere to Chicago or something. And like, well, if I don't have the money, I can't go. Like that can happen to you. You have to make sacrifices. You can't keep spending if you don't have it. And so when you get FOMO, you got to avoid FOMO and you got to avoid lifestyle creep. Don't worry about what other people are doing. And if you don't like it because you can't go on that girl's trip, then go make some sacrifices so that you can go there next time. You know, how important is it to kick the can down the road? And the lifestyle creep, the FOMO thing, is that, or keeping up with the Joneses is the worst thing you could ever do. Because you can even push things along down the road, like I keep saying. And we've seen plenty of people through our lives where they get to be 65 or they get to that range where Medicare kicks in and they can't work or they're tired or maybe they're aged out of jobs. But the problem is when they go into retirement, they actually get depressed and their life is worse because they can't live the same lifestyle as they did in their last day of work. Or they're working a part-time job somewhere and they're not making the money that they used to, and then they're stuck with debt. And so you don't want to be in that spot. You have to look for your future and plan. And again, if you don't have the money for the things you're spending, then you got to cut back and start making your lifestyle changes so that you can afford it. Because, and then you have to invest. And if you don't put your money away on top of paying your bills, you're going to be screwed and you don't want to be there. And there's no one else to blame but yourself. So really important that if you're budgeting and you haven't done it before and you're getting into it, or you're realigning your budget with your partners, like which is a lot of this topic, then you have to really sit down and have an honest conversation. But usually when you put a plan together, you can turn the ship around a lot faster than you think.
And the one thing that you said that a lot of people still don't do is to pay yourself first. Can you elaborate on that?
Paying yourself first is meaning you have to take care of your future. It's one thing to live normal because you can pay bills and go out and do whatever you want to do in life. But paying yourself first is investing in yourself. You have to put your money away. The standard rule is about 10 to 15% of your gross income should go into some type of retirement account. So that can be a 401k, but maybe if you don't have that, it can be a 403b or 457. If you don't have that, you can put it into a Roth IRA. And if you max out your Roth, then you can put it into a traditional IRA or just a separate brokerage account. There's always a way to put your money away, but you should stick to that ideal. And typically that will lead you to enough money down the road over, because it's not timing the market when you're putting money in, it's timing or time in the market, because the compound interest will grow. And then if you get a raise, continue to bump that up. Don't stick in that 10 to 15% range. Most people don't max out their 401k at $19,500 a year. And if you're over 50, you can do another $6,500. And so Cindy and I both put $26,000 away because we're over 50. So right there's $52,000 no matter what, without even an employer match. And so there's goals you can reach. Just don't stop there. If you get a bonus, take some of that money. And you can temporarily adjust your 401k or paying yourself into some account because you got a little bonus money here just that point in time, and then go back to normal. But you have to keep pushing that up if you want to have more options, because I've been around plenty of people who have a lot more money than I do. And the one thing that I always say in the financial, the wealth world, is as much as you can believe this, for most people, they're going to tell you never have enough money. And the last point I'm going to make on this is that your nest egg is like an insurance policy in yourself. So if the rule is about 4% to take your money out in retirement a year, to let those dividends resurface when you take that money out, and then you're back to the normal money that you, your pile that you started with, is that if you have $1 million, that's only 40 grand a year. Mm-hmm. And now maybe get some Social Security, cool, but you shouldn't rely on that. Social Security should be something that's a bonus. So that's not a lot of money. So if you get to 2 million, now that's 80 grand. So that's what people never think about, is I need to make this nest egg as big as I can, because your job's not to go take it all out. Because you could live to, Zanetta, you could live to 100. You don't know these days with medicine technology. And people want to, some of these people want to retire at 40 with the fire movement, right?
My grandmother was 96, so she was close.
Yeah.
I think her brother was 99.
Well, then I might be talking to you on another one of these shows in 50 years. So, you know, so it's, people don't think of it that way. They don't think long term. So you have to have fun at the same time and take care of yourself. But they really miss the boat on really what it means to, like, have enough of a nest egg. They don't plan out what I would need down. And I know it's hard when you're young, but you really, the sooner you start doing that in life, you become more managed. And when you actually manage your budget and invest in yourself at the same time, you usually don't see people flip over to the dark side and stop doing it. They usually get there and they stay there because they see that they build for themselves and they feel confident that I am good with my money and it's my castle. You know what I mean? No one's crossing my moat in front of it. And you know what I mean? I'm taking care of myself. I've got it. I'm good. And that's what it happens. That's the way people will get there, and it can be done.
Well, I'd like to thank you, David, for so much for being on my show again, and I really appreciate it. Can you provide the audience with the information on how they can get in touch with you?
Absolutely. Our website's somethingonmymind.net, and we have blog transcripts from our shows and other blog education and some the budgeting stuff's on there and worksheets and things like that. And then as far as podcasts, you can find it in pretty much any streaming app, and then you can find us on all social media, like, for example, two of them, like Instagram and TikTok, are at somm.podcast.
Well, I'd like to thank you for listening to Legacy Game Changers. I love helping people make, save, and grow your income. I can be reached at legacygamechanger@gmail.com or text me at 443-906-3882. Don't forget to share this with your friends and family, and have a blessed day.